Time doesn't heal our wounds. It numbs them. Outside time, those wounds still bleed, and all of our demons still wait for us. Welcome to Horror Movie News Episode 22. We got the cast and the director of A House of Demons. So let's get to it.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movie.
What's happening? Who are we?
Don't you blame the movies?
Oh.
The movies don't create the cycles.
They don't create the cycles, guys. I'm not sure if you heard. Oh.
Yay.
Oh.
It's a party.
Yes. Welcome, 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 everybody.
Yay.
Welcome to Horror Movie News. As I said earlier, this is episode 22. My name is Anthony Becerra, and you can find me later. And Carrie.
Hey, it's Carrie Lane here.
Hey guys, I'm Oliver Drennan.
And with us, super special guests. First off, we got Patrick Meany, director of House of Demons.
Woo!
Hello.
Go ahead and tell us where we can find you on social media.
At Patrick Meany, M-E-A-N-E-Y.
Thank you so much. And next to him, we have Dove Mayer, like the mayor of L.A.
Dun, dun, dun. You can find me at Dove Mayer. Instagram, right. Twitter, you know.
Right on. Keep it simple. I like it.
Yeah.
And also, last but not least, we have Caitlin Borgen. And go ahead and tell where you can find her.
Caitlin Borgen.
Borgen. Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's okay. And that's the Instagram, KAYTLINBORGEN. And at Miss Caitlin, MISS Caitlin.
Woo!
Right on.
It sounds so much better with that music behind it.
Yeah,
right. It's very
traumatic. Right on. Thank you all so much for joining us in
the
studio today. Really appreciate it. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this film. And we will get to it. But right now, we have to do some quick house cleaning. So where you can find this show and all of us. So at youtube.com/popcorntalknetwork on our channel, as well as our show Twitter at Horror News PTN, and of course, our popcorntalknetwork.com. That's about to get a new facelift very soon. And also as well as Apple Podcasts, just type in Horror Movie News and look up for this little icon right behind me, and that's us. So pretty much give us all the 5-star reviews, comments and everything, subscribe. And those of you who comment and rate, subscribe and everything, send us proof that you did so. And we'll have a little treat for you, and we'll reveal that later on in the show. All right, house cleaning, done. All right, let's get into our first segment, The Abyss. So pretty much, as I said earlier before the show, it's just films that we've been watching. Of course, all of us, we saw House of Demons.
Yes.
So I think we can like all start with that and just do quick overviews. Quick thoughts. Overall thoughts. That's what I'm trying to get to. There you go.
We are doing this not spoiler free, right? Because I was like, there's some comments, but I think that would spoil it.
Mm. Should we leave that to Patrick?
Oh, no. Gosh.
I mean, I think you want to get people intrigued. So if it's a spoiler that sounds like it would make you want to watch the movie.
Oh, okay.
You could say it.
Okay.
I like that it's a horror movie that involves time travel.
Yeah. That was...
I was like, that's new.
Right?
Like it.
That
and a talented cast with also Amber Benson, Buffy alumni. And also, you guys are awesome as well. So I enjoyed seeing you guys just collaborate and just have a lot of fun. I can tell like you guys had a lot of fun with this film. And I have a quick question. I know a lot of you guys are kind of in like the geek community, so why was that important to you to incorporate in that into this film, like a geek, total geeky cast?
Well, also Chloe.
Chloe, Whitney Moore and Tiffany Smith and Taliesin Jaffe, Dove himself, Jeff Torres. So I think part of it was just, you know, when we were doing auditions, people who are into that stuff kind of got what was going on, and it was easier to be like, you know, like, this is you watching an alternative version of yourself from the past in a fantasy and stuff. Some people were just kind of like, what's going on? And some people like, got it. So I think that helped. And I think it's just like, you know, I know a lot of people in that world, and there's a lot of people who are great actors who don't sometimes just host or just, you know, kind of do more, I guess, reality type work. But they're great actors, so it was fun to kind of bring them in. And especially people who know each other. I know, Dove, you know a lot of the people beforehand.
Yeah, I worked with Amber Benson on a short sheet, directed a couple years before, so.
Oh, cool.
It was great to work with her again, in front of the camera.
I would just have to say, I tremendously enjoyed this film. I thought it was a very smart film, very emotionally driven, and also psychologically based. And something that it touches on the human condition and on so many aspects of just being a human and having to deal with problems, like internal struggles of many, many different lives, which I thought it was brilliantly communicated.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. thank you for making it such a great film.
Yeah, it definitely explores a lot of different kind of traumas that people can experience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And relatable ones. Like, even if you don't, you know somebody who has, or you've seen that, or you get it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I still want to stick to this, just get through this segment real quick. So yeah, just overall thoughts of that. And also, I guess I'll go first. Not necessarily a horror film, but I did see Thoroughbred, so I'll just touch on it briefly because I did really enjoy this film. Directed by Corey Finley, and it was actually a stage play. Well, he's a stage writer, and he wrote this film himself and then also directed it. So it does feel like a play at some points, but the cinematographer was so... Oh, the cinematographer is the same one. I can't remember his name, but he's the same one who did A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which I also really enjoyed because it's Anna Lily Amipour, I believe. And it was quite the delight. I mean, it's very grim. It's not a delightful film, but it's I really enjoyed watching it. Anna Taylor-Joy knocked it out of the park, as well as the other girl who plays Amanda. Definitely worth the watch. I can't stop raving about this film. That's why I want to talk about it just a little bit before I get too carried away. And also after that, earlier this morning, actually, I saw Room 237, which was released in 2012, and it's actually a documentary focusing on Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. And it's directed by Rodney Asher, and it's an in-depth analysis of Kubrick's masterpiece, The Shining. So they break it down. I like how they break it down into sections, and they go into so much depth talking about what the labyrinth was to like how Kubrick installed so many different like subliminal messages throughout the film that makes it feel so unsettling when you're watching it, because the whole time you feel like there's something wrong. There's a sense of dread that you feel when you're watching it, and there's a sense of uncomfortableness when you are watching it. And I gotta say it was brilliantly like constructed. It doesn't use any like of those like talking confessions like, yeah, we were doing this kind of like, no, there's none of that. It was all just B-roll, and I don't even think they introduced the people who were talking at times. Like, they just like there were just voices. And I loved how it starts off, like the beginning, it's like each voice has a different take on the film and like what they saw from it, like from what they got from Jack's typewriter, and how that was like they related that to the Holocaust, to how they did the can of with an Indian in the freezer, and how it also relates to the genocide of Indians in our country, all the way to also what's the conspiracy theories of Stanley Kubrick filming the Apollo moon landing, the first one that we saw, and how he had if it was true, I'll still keep it up, like nothing definite, but if it was true, how he had to go through having to go through life being able to not tell anybody about it, including his wife. And so when it's like when Shelley Duvall sees the famous typewriter, and she sees the line, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, that's kind of like Kubrick conveying that, like, this is what I've been working on, and it's driving me insane because I can't do anything, I can't reveal anything. And even the people who he let it slip to, who he actually, like, did reveal what he was working on, there was dire repercussions. And also some of that can be seen as in his film Eyes Wide Shut as well. And how Bill's character is informed that he should not follow the investigation towards the lady that is murdered, if you guys have seen that one. But yeah, I thought it was a fantastic film, fantastic documentary, probably one of my favorites, I gotta say, and definitely worth checking out.
Where
and
can we watch that, though?
That was actually I saw it on Hulu.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
It sounds really interesting.
Yeah, and then Thoroughbred's in theaters right now, yeah.
Nice. And I saw Tomb Raider again.
Twice.
I really liked it. Yeah. Well, I went with somebody who hadn't seen it yet. If you guys haven't seen it yet, they do touch upon some kind of supernatural stuff, but give a good explanation of how you could interpret that. And I like that. Saw Red Sparrow, and I'm so glad you were like, it's a slow burn. Because then I was like, it's fine. Like, it wasn't slow. Because I'm like, he's like, it's a slow burn. And it is. And I liked it, but it wasn't. It's not crazy amazing, but the torture scenes are so good because you don't actually see it. but like you feel everyone's you cringing. Yeah. You're like, ah, ooh, but they didn't show it, which almost at first was like, well, that's cheap to do.
It's like a play on like whatever you come up with your head is a lot worse than what's actually.
No, like you know what they're doing to the person, but like, for example, they're like hurting someone's back. Mm-hmm. And so you see the person behind them doing something to it, but you don't actually see like the wound itself, but you know what it is. Oh, so yeah. Then you're like
still cringing.
Ah! Yeah.
Yeah, I was totally
or it's
cringing.
Like below the table or something, but mm-hmm. it's very effective. I started Altered Carbon, which I really like. I'm a little slow to that one or catching up on that one. There's a hotel in it that's a macabre hotel and it makes me so happy in the have you watched Altered Carbon yet?
No.
Oh, you need to watch it. There's a it's a macabre hotel, and the person who runs it is an AI, and he's Poe. He's Edgar Allan Poe, essentially.
Oh, he's
adorable.
The best actor in the,
I love
in
him.
That
yeah,
he was the best actor there.
I was like, he's my favorite one so far. Yeah. He's a small character, but I was like, this character. But it has a lot of interesting ideas of like what you are, who you are, and similar in the lines of like if you had a clone or not and you died and your clone goes on, is it really you? But Altered Carbon's a different concept. I'm doing this because it's a disc that you are mm-hmm. that's in your neck. Mm. But they explore it.
My
really
doppelganger,
exciting.
Joel Kinnaman.
Yeah. It's so, well, it's,
so it's like
it's
the
a
whole
show.
The whole like Chappie thing, like being able to upload your
essentially,
subconsciousness or
like,
your consciousness to
at
1 year's
old. Kind of. Because at 1 year old, you essentially get an implant that's like a disc this big and all of your entity, but then that questions kind of like where and what is your soul, because it's all of your memories and more experiences. Mm-hmm. But essentially, if that whole thing is you and that went somewhere else, then yes, that is you living on. Because technically there is that with Star Trek that when you get beamed up, it's not really you and it's a clone and you died. Mm. No, okay. I was like, oh, super nerds. But
wow.
So it's cool.
Stone face.
Right?
Yes.
You're just like, wait, no.
Poker face.
But yeah, it's a cool show. I'm only like 3 episodes in, so I can't really comment on how the rest of it goes. But
and
it's
we
cool.
also have the after show here at AfterBuzz TV every Monday at 10 o'clock.
Yay!
So check that out.
And more Be the Beginning. Tune in for anime after show at 6 today. We're talking about that. It's getting really good.
Right on, Ollie.
Well, I keep it short and simple this week. I really didn't watch anything. I did watch House of Demons, a little film. I'm super excited you guys are here so we can talk about it and ask you questions. But it was my birthday this past weekend,
oh,
so
happy
I did.
Birthday!
Thank you.
Oh,
yeah, I did more drinking than watching anything. So, but
celebrate.
I think we all did.
Yeah. I am still watching Jessica Jones, my favorite TV show on Netflix for sure. If you guys aren't watching it, you better watch it. But more importantly, I want to know what you guys are watching at the moment or have watched.
Good. Who wants to take the lead, Patrick?
I'll start, I guess. I also saw Thoroughbreds. The acting was fantastic. Mm-hmm. It made me, you know, very excited to see Ready Player One and see that Amanda girl, don't know her name, sorry, back.
Yeah.
Back in action. I think on TV, I've been watching the new X-Files, which I thought the last season I was kind of iffy on, but this season I think it's been great and kind of made me go back and watch a bunch of old episodes, which was exciting to revisit. Hard to believe they're like 25 years old now. So,
yeah,
but still good. And
where are you rewatching them? Netflix had them for a long time.
They're on
Hulu
now.
They're on
Hulu
now.
So
okay.
Yeah, just kind of been picking out some favorites of the past.
Nice.
But yeah, Duff.
Yeah, I'm actually watching Jessica Jones and Altered Carbon.
Yay!
And I won't tell you anything if you guys haven't seen up to now.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything. But there are two very different shows. But Altered Carbon is amazing. I love watching, for some reason, Joel Kinnaman. If you ever watch RoboCop and you take a screenshot, it looks like my face. It's really strange. but I like his depth. I like how he makes very interesting choices.
Mm-hmm.
And also the ancillary characters are amazing.
Yes.
Poe is awesome. And Jessica Jones is she's just so surprising to me. That actress,
Kristen
I wouldn't
Ritter,
ever expect her
amazing.
To be in that role. Yeah. And she does some, it's just surprises. She surprises me every single episode.
Mm-hmm.
With what she's capable of doing, it's really cool. So those are my two favorite shows right now.
Yeah. And I gotta say, I do remember when I saw Kristen Ritter on Don't Trust to Be in Apartment 23, which is like a completely different role
totally
for her.
Different. Yeah.
I love that show. I wish it lasted more than one season, but like unfortunately, it got cut after once. But I'm glad she's our J. Jones now.
I didn't expect it. I thought it was gonna be terrible. I was like, this girl's not gonna be.
Oh, she's out of my league. She's the best friend. I love her.
Did you see her in Breaking Bad?
Yes.
Yeah. That's where I first was like, oh my god.
She had a short stay on that show.
She was so good.
Yeah.
But I haven't watched the new season of Jessica Jones yet, but I watched season one. And then I've been watching a lot of documentaries lately.
Ooh. Cool.
Like The Roosevelts. I just finished Ken Burns, I believe. And so there's 7-hour or 2-hour long episodes of all of the... It's Teddy, Franklin, and Eleanor. That's who they're mostly focusing on. And it was really insane to just watch that much footage and thinking that you know them in a certain way and then seeing it. I don't know. My mind's still kind of blown from that. And I'm trying to, like, see how everything went wrong. Anyway, yeah. That's been a big thing.
Personally, are you, like, into documentaries as is, or are you, like, more into, like, history?
I mean, I like watching documentaries as an actor because I feel like you get, I don't know, you learn so much more about a time period and you think more about putting yourself in someone's shoes and get all of, like, the little nuances about someone, and you're not just, like, I don't know. I mean, trying to. And, I mean, history has always fascinated me. But I'm also watching The Office right now. So I
hey, go, yeah.
Like,
best of both worlds.
Yeah. I'm rewatching it. It's like, you gotta go back. And I think you appreciate things so much more when you rewatch something after so many years. So. Mm.
And were you a fan of Parks and Recs?
Oh, well? I haven't really watched it. I'm literally just thinking that.
I'm like a little jealous because I'm like, oh, I can't wait for you to experience that. Like, it's such a great show.
Yeah. Once I finish The Office, which I'm almost done, like rewatching it all, then I'll go to Parks.
I've never seen Parks and Recs.
Oh my god!
But I was an extra on it a bunch of times.
I do gotta say, like, to preface it, like, the first two seasons does feel like it's trying to be like an Office mock, but then. I think midway through the second season kind of finds its grounding, like its footing, and it hits the ground running after that. It's so fantastic. It's one of my favorite shows. Yeah.
Have you guys seen Orville?
Oh, not yet.
Not yet.
No. It's surprisingly good.
Yeah.
I just forgot to mention it. Orville. I'm not a huge fan, but there's some actors there that I'm like, they're pretty good, but I don't believe everything they do. But the writing is so good. So Orville, you know, you think it's a parody on Star Trek, but it's actually so great just
on its
own.
It's just science fiction kind of parody in general.
It is,
too, right?
It is.
Yeah.
But you see all the clean uniform stuff. Yeah. I'm a Star Wars guy, so it looks more Star Trek, obviously.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the writing, every episode, like, I'm actually cracking up, and it's rare when you watch a comedy and you're actually laughing out loud. So
it
recommend
takes a lot.
It.
Did that get renewed for season 2?
I don't know.
I thought it did. Mm. I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised if it did. Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, they love him on Fox, so. All right, so that's settled. Now that the dust has cleared, let's get into House of Demons. So we actually have the trailer for House of Demons, if we can get that rocking and rolling. And we will be talking slightly over it, because it's on... You know, just some.
It's awkwardly behind.
Yeah,
I know. I'm sorry. I was about to say, if you want to, like, yeah, you guys are in
there?
It.
Yeah, I it. Yeah.
All right. So yeah. So this movie was. Here's us.
Yeah, Caitlin, it's interesting seeing you today with the much lighter auburn hair. It looks really nice. And you look good with dark hair too.
I feel like, Caitlin, every time I see you not wearing all black, it's a little weird.
I make a point not to wear all black when I...
Right on. So, yeah, just to give a quick synopsis of the film. So, four friends reunite and spend the night in a remote home that was once used by a Manson family-like cult. As the night progresses, the friends are forced to confront their deepest secrets and darkest demons. Boogity boogity. All right. Just to get a quick overview of the characters, so we have, it's interesting because, to preface it, so it does take place, there's two different time periods taking place at once. So in the present time of the film's universe, it's Gwen, who's played by Kaylee Borgen, right here, right there. And then also we have Whitney Moore as Katrina, and we have Whitney Moore as Katrina, and then we have Matthew was played by Jeff Torres, and Spencer played by Morgan Peter. And then on the cult side, we have the very charismatic and charming leader, Fraser, played by Dove Mayer. And then we also have Maya, played by Amber Benson, who's the I'm guessing she's your wife, right? Or she...
No, she's just a good friend.
She's just a good friend. Okay. Partner. But she's the
They're
one who
hippies.
Gives...
I don't know if they would subscribe to to official titles.
It's complicated.
It's complicated. Usually in cults it can be complicated.
Yeah.
We also
like
have...
the Pride of Lions. They're all his mates.
The Pride of... Oh, yeah.
Yes, yeah, all of them.
Yes.
And then we have the character of Samantha, played by Tiffany Smith. And she's the one who gets... Well, I guess let's not. I was like, oh, we can't be so gonna spoil it.
Let's just say she's my enforcer.
Oh, that's a good way of putting it. She's like your right hand man, pretty much.
Yeah. Yep.
Apart from the other right hand man, Derek, which is played by Brian Towns. Mm-hmm. And on the more miscellaneous side of characters, we have Dave, played by Taliesin Jaffe. Or
Jaffe. Yep.
Jaffe, right? Okay, cool.
Critical Role. Very popular show now.
Oh, yeah, on the Geek and Sundry. Right on. Yeah. And then, I don't know if this is a spoiler. I guess it's not really a spoiler. We have the demon himself, played by Paradox Pollock. Mm-hmm. Right on. So that's just a quick overview of the characters. And so I actually want to start this off with just like some quick technical questions. As in, like, where was this film shot?
I was in Santa Clarita, basically in the Angeles National Forest. So we had a sort of cabin-y looking house, as you see in the film, out in the middle of the woods. It was very remote. There was no phone service.
Oof.
No running water.
Ooh.
And, the bathroom had some issues, so we had,
day one.
Already sounds like a horror movie.
Yeah, that's what people said. But it was a great location because we could kind of run around and yell and, you know, fake murder people and things in the woods, and nobody bothered us ever. So it was a fun. I think it was a fun experience for me, at least. What do you guys think?
For the most. Caitlin?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, it was far enough away from the city that, you know, you're not in LA, but it wasn't, we made the commute back and it wasn't too far. And I don't know, it kind of being stuck on a location like that when it's so hot and there's so many things going against you, still coming together to make the film and actually like bond. It was a much more intimate experience than it would have been if we were just like on a set or a super comfortable air conditioned running water.
Absolutely. Running across
working bathroom.
Yeah. All the obstacles we had actually built such a level of camaraderie.
What time of year did you film? You said it was hot.
It was August.
August, yeah.
Yeah, right?
So. Yeah. SoCal, August.
Triple digits?
Yeah, triple digits.
At one point, there were actually fire engines we heard in the distance because the fires were happening.
Yeah.
Oh,
we almost had to evacuate at one point.
Yeah.
Wow.
Luckily, we didn't.
And how long was the shoot?
It was 13 days, so it was very quick.
Less than 2 weeks.
So, yeah, we were doing, on average, like 7 pages of script a day. So it was a real, not a lot of room for error.
Patrick felt that by not having any sleep and working constantly, we'd be able to just jump right into the movie and things would be just trippy from the beginning.
Yeah, I was about to say, because, like...
First for the characters.
Yeah, absolutely. The characters are, like, in... Because I guess from what I got from it was... The demon was having some sort of powers over the minds of the people who were inside the house that was eventually slowly, and not really corrupting them, but very like playing with their minds as in like playing off of their internal pain, I guess. So yeah, that works out that there, you guys are in a sense suffering, you know, so it adds to things.
I mean, I wasn't intending to be a method actor, but it just
let itself about it. No, I mean, it totally works and I appreciate everything. It's, appreciate you guys that you guys had to go through that because I think it turned out great. I also want to talk about the budget. Like how big was this budget?
It was around like $100,000. So it was very low budget.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we had to shoot so fast because there wasn't, you know, every day is money, every day is food and crew and stuff. So it was just about kind of honing in on, I mean, that's part of the reason that the film kind of mostly takes place in this one house. But then there's so many different kind of flashbacks and other elements that we wound up. It wasn't exactly as like confined as a lot of movies like that might be. But I think it was just really making the most of it and kind of trying to come up with, you know, different ways to make everything feel exciting and, you know, don't feel constrained or like there was that movie with like Ryan Reynolds was in a coffin or whatever. And you were like, oh, they managed to keep me like entertained, even though he was in a coffin for 90 minutes. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted to feel big, even though we were working with limited resources.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that is conveyed, like, through like how you said, the flashbacks and everything. And also, like, not only, like, expanding the setting of where it takes place, but also expanding on the characters, like, psychologies at the same time, where it's like, yeah, you're introduced to them at a face level, but by the way, here's what they're actually, like, going through. Like, here's, like, their internal struggles. Here's, like, what they carry around with them every single day. And I thought that was very interesting, as, like, it's their minds are, in a sense, a gateway to the wider world that the film is trying to establish. And I thought it was really cool.
It was really cool.
I gotta say, this is such a, like, ambitious film, because there is some time travel in here. And I just want to say, like, how does this concept come to you? Because you wrote it as well, right?
Yeah. Well, I think part of it was I wanted to write something that I knew I could produce, mm-hmm. and would be able to do, you know, with kind of limited resources, but still feel very big. So part of it was thinking about, like, oh, what could we do with, you know, a confined location, and the idea of having sort of these friends who had drifted apart. I think that's something that's always anybody can relate to, because I think we all have people, you know, we knew in high school or college or whatever that we were super tight with, and now, you know, you never see them. So it's interesting to have people who have a lot of history kind of come together. Mm-hmm. In terms of kind of Dove's character is sort of, as you said in the description, sort of a Charles Manson-y type of 60s cult leader. So when I first moved to LA, I was kind of curious about, like, the local history. So I read a bunch of books about, like, the weirder side of LA. And one was about Charles Manson, which is a fascinating book by this guy named Jeff Gwynn. Because if you live here, he'll be like, he drove up Sunset to the 405, or, like, you know, and you're like, oh, wow, that's very close. So it makes it feel more real. And I think it was also this idea that he was somebody who had sort of like an almost like supernatural hold over the people in his group, mm-hmm. and that he never murdered people. He had people would go and murder people for him. Like, that's a pretty, it's one thing to be like, I am able to, you know, stab someone. It's another thing to be able to be like, I am so persuasive and so powerful that I can just say, do this, and somebody will do it. And I think that was very interesting and more kind of scary. And, you know, I wanted to kind of delve into this character and explore the ways that he was able to create this attachment from people. So that's mm-hmm. a lot of what kind of Dove and Caitlin go through in the film, is kind of exploring the way that he's able to be very charming and very, you know, to the point where you're like, oh, this guy seems great. If it wasn't a horror movie and it was a romantic comedy, you'd be like, oh, man, she finally found, like, the man of her dream.
But he then just happens to be a cult leader.
Yeah. That's
from the past.
It's going so well.
So, yeah, I think that was one of the big interesting things. I think just the idea of people kind of, you know, facing their demons, it was very interesting to me, and of kind of people diving into their brain and using different ways of filmmaking to bring the internal to life on screen. Mm-hmm. Is always, you know, some of my favorite movies do that. And I think it was just a really cool opportunity to dive into these people and sort of force them to confront the stuff that's going on in their life in a trippy, crazy way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right on. And yeah, you did touch on something that I wanted to ask, Dove. So you played the cult leader, and it's a very specific, like, great point of how he says, Maya comes up to him. After there's some sort of pill swallowing, she comes up and is like, oh, you murderer, you killed them. And then he replies, I didn't kill them. They gave themselves to the light, or they gave themselves to me. Yeah. And I was just like, wow, this guy. So with that in mind, with that context, it's like, how you as an actor, like, how do you rationalize this character's motives as, like, when you're, like, building this character, like, did you judge him, or did you have to, like, no, let's not judge him, let's see where he's coming from, let's try to rationalize this, and, like, what was your conclusion to that?
Well, listen, a lot of themes you see in this movie are ubiquitous. There are human stories. All these people have their own good sides and bad sides, and they have to deal with those bad sides that are demons in the movie. His good side, mm-hmm. everyone else saw as a bad side. It's all about perspective. As far as I was concerned, I was being completely altruistic. Mm-hmm. I'm doing everything I can to help those around me better their own lives. And this is what I felt was the path. Mm-hmm. So there never had to be any judging about how do I convince myself that a bad guy is actually a good guy. Bad guys never think they're the good, bad guys. Mm-hmm. And that's what's scarier.
Yeah.
And when you can relate to the demon, to the bad guy, that's when it starts to get scary. Mm-hmm. And those are the kind of antagonists I love. So I just worked on building his altruism, as contradictory as that sounds. He wanted to do good. He wanted to help everyone around him, and of course himself, and help his brother. So it was actually finding that piece inside me that wants to help people around and wants to help people I care about and undo things that happened in my past was very easy to do.
Well, Gwen certainly liked it.
I was going to say, being nitpicky, though, you did say he wants to help himself and then help his brother.
Yeah, I was about to say.
And I'm absolutely. Like, you said it first and then the second, which I'm like, yeah, I think he wants to help himself. And he does want to help his brother.
Sure. Well, it began with helping my brother. That was the mission mm-hmm. from the beginning.
And I think that's a justification as it goes on, though. Because he's like, gets to enjoy it after. Well, but that's our experience as a viewer.
Absolutely. I think that's what anybody who kind of has that power is, you often, you know, start with a good intent and then it becomes corrupted. But, I mean, in the film, he's doing, the things he's doing do work. So who knows if he had just kept going. And also, I think it's interesting with Caitlin, I tried to make it so that he never really, like, lies or mm-hmm. does things, you know, misleads people.
Yeah.
He always tries to tell the truth. And he doesn't see it, you know, as bad. Other people might see it as bad, but he is never telling people things that, you know, aren't true.
Yeah.
It's just they're bad sometimes. So.
Yeah, the cult member, she's like, he's right. He was telling the truth. And
yeah.
Yeah. It's all about perspective.
And then what I got from your character, Dove, was I think it touched on, or I guess like my take on the character was that he couldn't accept the death of his brother, and that's what he was chasing throughout. That's mainly the whole reason why this is all happening, is to try and save his brother. And I think that's what possibly the greater message of your character is, that, you know, when it comes to not being able to accept someone's past of a dear loved one, you're driven to the brink of doing drastic things to yourself and self-harm.
Not only that, but feeling responsible for his death.
Oh yeah, I didn't catch that. Wow, yeah. That's interesting.
So okay. If I didn't tell anybody, if I told someone sooner, or if I stopped him from going into the lake, maybe it wouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of guilt.
So I was about to say guilt.
Which, and, again, is ubiquitous. We all
know that. And another character that also touched on guilt was also Spencer, with the feeling guilty for Dave's condition and the car accident as well.
Yeah.
That's great.
I think everybody, we kind of tried to have like almost like an original sin moment, as in like they flash back to a moment where their life went awry, or mm-hmm. this is the moment that they perhaps use as a justification for their own problems. And I think a lot of people will do this in their life, and they'll say like, oh, what, you know, and I'd say like, whatever, but like, I, you know, didn't get into the good college and now I don't have a good job, and like, fuck it, I don't, or bleep it, I don't,
it's okay. Yeah.
You know, my life, like, I can't turn it around because of something that happened to me. So it's kind of forcing everybody in the movie has to kind of confront this thing. We are bad and are, you know, justifiably things that they feel very bad about, but say, like, can you kind of get past it, or is it going to define the rest of your life?
And the similarity, when you brought up Spencer, one of my favorite things about the film is the similarity between Fraser and Spencer.
Mm-hmm.
Spencer could very well be Fraser in another time. If he was at my time period and we were both in the medical field, if he would have tried drugs, and he would have maybe came to the same conclusions.
Mm-hmm. And also, I believe there's a line that said that they say that Spencer looks a lot like Bobby, which was your brother, right? So that kind of comes full circle.
That was the wizard.
Yeah. I was like, oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Caitlin, you also had a very like heavy arc in this film as mm-hmm. well, and I'm curious to know what does this role mean to you? Because you had dealt with abuse from your mother and the neglect. So how is it portraying that, and what does it mean to you?
I think that I think she felt a lot of guilt as well. I mean, not being, you know, like 30 years old, still basically living the same lifestyle that she had been all of her 20s, and just not able to see a way out and to grasp onto relationships. I mean, she was just holding on to the past, and I think that I think when I auditioned for this in that point in my life, I realized, like, oh my God, this is kind of me. Oh. In a way, you know, not just holding. No, but like you see again, like you relate to it. I related to her and felt like this, oh wow, I have a tough exterior, but I'm such a flower. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a really sensitive person. I take things very personally, you know, like all of that. And to see Gwen be so hardened by it, but on the inside, she's just got this really big heart and just wants to be accepted, but she doesn't even know how to accept herself. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's kind of, you know, that was easy to connect with and to kind of look at, okay, what have I been holding on to in my past life that I, like, the choices that I made that are still affecting me in some kind of way, and it's the past. Like, who am I now? Who am I today? And how can I take control of that? So, I mean, totally, like, my life is a lot different than Gwen's, but I think that on a very deep level, I related to just her insecurities and mm-hmm. how to kind of move past that despite of mm-hmm. what's happened, you know?
And also, she just kind of wanted to tell a story. I mean, she's a writer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Patrick, was that important for you to have a character that is a writer? Because you wrote the film.
I mean, I think it was something where it was relatable for me, you know, the notion of wanting to, like, put something of yourself or something that's in your brain out there. And I think it's also something that a lot of people do have an ambition to kind of create something, be it a story or, you know, a band or a bench or whatever. Like, and it can be hard to do it. I think there's like a big insurmountability, and it's kind of like you can feel like something is just too much to tackle. So I wanted to kind of create a character who's like people that I know or have encountered who's like, oh, I'd love to do this one day, or like, I'm trying, but, you know, struggles with it. And I think that everybody has some things that are easier for them and things that are harder for them. And then this was something that was a big challenge for her and she was really trying to do, but had a lot to get through before she could reach that point.
But like a overwhelming need to be understood mm-hmm. and to tell her story, but like not knowing how. It's almost like you're in a prison, so you kind of shut down.
Was it that she didn't know how? Or was it that she was just not confident enough within herself to actually fulfill what she wanted to do in life?
I think that she didn't see the confidence of it in that way. She didn't know how, but mm-hmm. ultimately, I mean, yeah, once she gained confidence, was able to kind of find the...
You're welcome.
The scene where she's with the guy who's getting married, yep. I felt like she had a chance and he shot her down, so it wasn't even like she didn't try. Because yeah. they come outside and then she's kind of like, this was great and had a good time. Yeah. And then he's like, oh, you know what? I'm going to go to my car. And I was like, oh, she tried, though.
Yeah, no, so, she did try. And I mean, that's the thing. I think that she did put herself out there yeah. and was always then. She tried to put herself out there to her dad and mm-hmm. door was closed. So I think just, you know, and that breaks your confidence.
Yeah. So absolutely.
I mean, then it's like, okay, well, what do I, but rejection, you know, it has to make you grow stronger. Like you've got to find, you can't be looking to other people for approval. You can't be saying, oh, well, if you tell me it's okay, then I'll feel okay. You've got to find that in yourself. And I think that's like her overall lesson for everybody. Like I have to find, you know, my confidence in me, not get approval from someone.
So we don't care what you guys think about the movie.
No, but I really do.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, I think one of the things that I was trying to do was kind of create the sense where you could see everything from everyone's perspective. So in the early scenes, Gwen, she's, you know, used to hang out with her friends. They get drunk. They whatever. She goes back. She's like, let's have some wine. Let's celebrate. And to her friend Katrina, this is almost like dredging up a piece of herself that she wants to leave in the past. So it's almost as if Gwen is like rubbing her nose in the fact of all this bad stuff that happened to them in the past. But to Gwen, it's saying, I'm reaching out and I'm trying to connect with you. So it was interesting to try to always see every scene from everyone's perspective and make it where you can sympathize, you know, it's almost like a video game, I guess. Like you could play anyone in this movie and you could say, oh, I see why this person did that. And in that perspective, Gwen might seem a little, you know, rude. But if you look from Gwen's side, you know, like, oh, these other people are just being rude mm-hmm. and pushing her away. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, that's one of the cool things I think about an ensemble movie is that you get to see a bunch of different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got to say. And yeah, like there's, I like kind of like laid it out for me because like how, Because in a sense, like, everyone that walked through that door, they all had their own demons, was it? And it was, again, Spencer with Dave's condition, and it was Katrina who lied to Matthew about the miscarriage, where she actually, in reality, she... Well, wait, my bad. I just saw myself. But anyways, and then there's also a Gwen, who I felt was, like, the most multifaceted one, who because she had, like, the most feeling of inadequacy, and, like, she always would compare herself to her mother because everyone loved her mother more than, you know, actually, like, loved her or something. Or, like, it was easier for the mom to get men where she had trouble with. And I gotta say, overall, it's like, I think it's just like a study of the human condition, and how either if you can embrace your own faults, then you can thrive afterwards. But if you don't, then you fall victim to the demon, to your own demon. And I don't think, like you said, it's gonna like judge your life for the rest of it. Pretty much, you're gonna be on that path until you're able to do that. And yeah, I think it was a great film. It has a lot of themes that it touches on. And I would just like, as we're winding down here, I would just like to ask you one by one. So what did this film mean overall for you, and what do you hope audiences take from it?
I mean, I think for me, it was the first chance to make a narrative film and to kind of get, like, I love working with actors, and I think it was honestly, like, the best part of the most fun part of this was working with all the actors and working with them to kind of create these characters. And I think it was a real collaboration. Like, it's fun. I mean, I love, like, sitting at my house and just sitting on the computer and editing stuff, but it's very fun to get out there and be, you know, talking with the cinematographer, talking with the production designer, and having everybody else kind of bring what, you know, something of themselves to the movie, and working with the actors. And there was a lot of scenes, I think, where we would kind of, you know, work the lines together and work the beats and bring it to life off the page, you know, in a different way. And I think that was just, I mean, it was so much fun just to be able to create a project that, you know, was meaningful to me, and to be able to put it out there. And I mean, I think for the audiences, I hope that they kind of, you know, go in with an open mind and try to find, you know, the blend of, you know, something emotionally relatable and some fun horror stuff, and are able to kind of get both out of it. And, you know, enjoy someone being murdered, think about their own life. Like, so it should be, you know, fun and substantive. That's kind of the goal for me with the movie.
I feel like you accomplished it, man. Yeah. All right, Doug?
Well, I'd like to believe that the universe, there's a method to the madness. You know, there's a reason for everything. And as an actor, roles come into my life, hopefully for a reason. You know, so hopefully every role that I get, there is a mission, there's a story that can change my life or see my own personal life in a certain way. And there's a story, I forget who it was, but there was a famous actress who did a movie about her kids were killed. And people asked her, like, did you imagine your own kids getting killed? She said, no, of course not. I imagined my kids in this role, but what it did was, when I was done, I went home and hugged my kids tighter. So it wasn't about affecting, you know, it wasn't about your life, but it's, how does it affect your life afterwards? How do you see the world a different way? So this movie is it's a wonderful movie where there's so many stories that everyone can relate to. So I took from it, you know, I was able to see in my own life, what can I appreciate, or what are the demons in my life that I can work towards and find the courage to fight? And I'm hoping that everyone who watches this, they'll look back afterwards and think about their own demons and see how they can affect and how can they, you know, how can they meet paradox?
Hopefully they can defeat their own demons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right. And last but not least.
Wow. I think that the film playing Gwen, kind of like I said, because she goes on such a big arc and where she starts and where she finishes, and you know, changes, I don't know, every character I play, it changes me in some kind of way. Just as Dove's saying, my perspective shifted, and a little bit more, I think I looked at myself a little bit differently, and maybe how I need to take care of myself better or be a little softer on myself. Like, I don't have to beat myself up so much. I think that really shined a light on that. And so that for me is huge. You know, if I can take one positive thing to treat myself better after I play a character, like, you know, I think that's big. And I don't mean that like in a super dark way. I just, right. You know, it's like, oh, okay, I don't have to beat myself up. Like, yeah. I'm okay. Like, we're all okay. Like, everything's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And it was such a fun experience. We all, you know, being in the kind of sharing an experience, being on set, being on a film like this, it's like it only happens once. It can only happen one way. It's such a unique experience. And people that you meet, you'll remember them forever, like mm-hmm. getting to work with them and that one experience that we all shared together. It's cool. It's really special. So I'm really glad I was a part of it.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah, that was cool.
We wish we were a part of
it. Yeah,
yeah. Well, we are. That. We watched
now
it.
You are.
And now we've experienced it. Welcome.
No, that was great. Yeah, and also to touch on the whole it's gonna be okay. Like when I like to remind myself, like, there's no right way to live. You know, it's just mm-hmm. like, just do your thing. Like, you know, there's no like, no, you have to live. Like, no, just breathe and keep going, keep moving. Mm-hmm. And defeat your demons, for sure.
Just punch them in the face.
Or don't be afraid to, you know, take them head on. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Just plunge face first. And also, we have, so the little giveaway we were teasing at the top is these awesome posters. Ooh. Right here, House of Demon, that are actually signed by the director himself, I'm guessing, and the cast and crew. Thank you, Steve. Wow. Yeah,
that's also, why we love them. You just have
them. These aren't for, this one's to give away, but these aren't, but they're still really cool, and I would love to show these as well.
Sure.
Oh, beautiful. This, oh my lord.
I love that one.
It's beautiful.
And this is, I believe, an original painting, right?
Yeah, it's by artist Steve Cleff, who's at Cleff, CELEFF, on Twitter.
Nice.
Right. And he did an amazing job.
So hit him up. Tell him you love his work, because I surely do. Mm. It's really awesome. So that pretty much wraps up our show. Thank you all so much for coming in.
Really appreciate it.
I was like super psyched to talk about this because I saw this movie late at night and I was just like, oh, I was like dissecting it all in my little notebook here. And I was just very excited to get into the thick of it, you know?
Nice.
So I really appreciate you guys coming in, and go ahead and put yourself over with your social media and your name and everything.
Sure. Well, the movie's available on iTunes, Amazon, Google, Video On Demand. The DVD is available at a lot of Walmarts. Mm-hmm. So,
nice. Yeah.
Check it out. It's pretty much anywhere you can pay $3 and watch the movie, you can do it. So that's very cheap. $3 is, you know, if you saw $3 sitting on the ground and it was in a dirty area, you wouldn't pick it up. So I think you can afford it. But anyway, so yeah, check it out. Houseofdemonsmovie.com is you can find a whole list there. And then I'm at Patrick Meany, which is just M-E-A-N-E-Y, my name spelled out, on Twitter. And you can get all the updates. Or House of Demons X on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody took House of Demons. So
yeah,
what are you going to do?
We tweeted that out too for our show as well.
But yeah, check it out. And you'll find all kinds of cool stuff on there.
Okay. Yeah, check out the movie. It's great. I'm Dove Meyer at Dove Meyer, D-O-V-E-M-E-I-R. And if you're ever feeling lonely at night, hop, just throw House of Demons in the DVD player and I'll keep you company.
He'll lure you in.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm at Caitlin Borgen. That's my Instagram. And at Miss M-I-S-S. Caitlin is Twitter. So thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right, Oliver.
Hey, guys. I'm Oliver Jen. Follow me on all social media platforms at Ollie Dreamer and check out my cosplay page on Instagram at Ollie Cosplays.
I will.
Yes. And my name's Carrie Lane. You can find me online at Carrie D Lane. That's K-A-R-I-D-L-A-N-E. And tune in at 6 p.m. I'll be talking with this one and another host. And we are going to have a special guest for AfterBuzz Anime Reviews. We're talking about Be the Beginning, episodes 5-8.
Right on. And just to reiterate, just comment on our show on YouTube and or leave
a thumbs up.
Yeah, thumbs up. And also leave a 5-star review on iTunes. And we'll pick the winner based off of the whoever does that. I'll pick a raffle at the end of the month, which is probably next week, I think. And yeah, you'll get this awesome poster I showed you earlier. And again, my name is Anthony Becerra. You can find me everywhere at Tony B, just a little B. The letter B, Tony B Tony underscore. Thank you all so much.
This was
Horror Movie News. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Yes. And we'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.